Good evening. Since we're coming to Chanukah, we're going to be exploring a discourse. And it's Chanukah, it's Shabbat Parshat VeYeshev. And in fact, this Shabbat, this Friday evening, will be the first Chanukah candle. We light the Chanukah lights before the Shabbat lights. And we try to have a long candle or a lot of oil so that it burns a half an hour at least into night. So this is the first night of Chanukah. So in 1962, it was the same Kriyot. It was also Shabbat Parshat VeYeshev, the first light of the Chanukah lights. And so that's a discourse that we'll be looking at. It's not Muga, it's not edited by the Rebbe. But it focuses on the text of the Al Hanisim. So we have in front of us the Al Hanisim prayer, which is added into the Amidah and to blessings, the grace after meals. B'mei Matityahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol. You see this? In the days of Matityahu, the son of Yochanan, the high priest, Chashub. Do you see it here?
The little bit that you had on the...
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
Chashmonai Uvanav, the Hasmoneim and his sons. Kusha'amdam Malchut Yavan Harasha'ah, when there arose the king, the kingship of Greece, which acted in a wicked way, Alamcha Yisrael, against your people Israel. Lahashkichan Toratecha, and they were trying to make them forget their Torah, your Torah. Ulahaviram Michukei Ritzonecha, they wanted to make the Jews transgress the statutes of your will. Va'ata berachmecha rabim, but you in your great mercy, amadata lahem, you stood up for them, be'et saratam, at the time of their pain, of their difficulty. Ravtai drivam, you fought their battle. Dantai dinam, you judge their judgment. Nakamtai nikmatam, you took vengeance for them. Masata giborim biyad chalashim, you put the powerful in the hand of the weak. Verabim biyad maatim, and the many in the hand of the few. Tumeim biyad tohorim, the impure in the hand of the pure. Urushaim biyad tzadikim, vezeidim biyad oskei toratecha, the wicked in the hands of the righteous, and also the wicked in the power of those who learn your Torah. And it goes on and says how the Jewish people were successful, and then they cleared out the temple and they purified it. V'hidliku ne'erot b'chatzrot kodshecha, and they lit lamps in the courtyard of your sacred courtyard in the temple. And they fixed v'kavu shmonat yimei Chanukah elu. They fixed these 8 days of Chanukah. Lohodot u'lahalel l'shimcha agadot, to thank, to praise your great name. Now, the discourse is going to take a few words of this passage, and it asks a question about it, and then we come to a perspective on what was taking place during Chanukah and the way that relates to us at any time in the year. So that will be what we're going to be exploring. You notice that it's a slightly different edition of the discourse. This one is pointed, and it has an explanatory, a little bit of explanatory commentary down the side in case we get stuck. So we can. So this is produced in Israel with the idea that people who have never learnt one of these discourses before, it should be accessible to them. So we will begin with the Maimah Nigun. Nicole, do you have?
Don't worry.
Okay. Oh, ya, 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 ba, yo, ya, ya, ba, ya, ya, la, ya, la, yo, yo, yo. Ha, ya, ba, ba, ya, ya, ba, yo, ya, yo. Ha, ya, la, la, ba, ya, ya, la, la, ba, yo, ba, yo, ba, ya, ya, la, la, ba, ya, ya, yo. Ha yere lamba yom ba yom ha yere lamba ho ba ya 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 lamba ho ya 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 lamba ho yam bam ho yam bam bo ba'ata. So now we turn to the actual text of the discourse. Va'ata berachamecha rabin, you in your great mercy, Amadata lahem be'et tzaratam, you stood up for them at the time of their tzara, the time of their pain, their problems. Ravtai drivam, you fought their battle. Dantai dinam, you judged their judgment. Nakamtai nikmatam, you avenged their vengeance, etc. But tzarech lahavin, now we have to understand, ma'u inyan amadata lahem be'et tzaratam. What does it mean you stood up for them at the time of their pain, the time of their difficulty? The whole discourse just focuses on these few words, these four words. You stood up for them at the time of their difficulty. And the question it's asking, on the one hand, the words at the time of their difficulty seems to be redundant because it's already explained how they had a lot of problems in the lines before. So why does it again mention their difficulty, their problem? The lechora, because at first sight, kevan she'inyan hatzara nitba'er kva lifnei zeh, since the idea of the problems they had, the difficulty of Hellenistic rule in the time of Antiochus, when there were decrees against observing Judaism properly, and there was a pressure on people to serve idols and to behave in a Greek way. Hine kushamatchil levayeh ofen ha'atzala al-yedei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, behold, when it begins to explain how God saved them, it should have just said, you in your great mercy, you judged, you fought their battle. And that explains that the saving of the Jewish people came from the quality of God's great mercy. As is known, there's a difference between ordinary mercy and rachamim rabim, great mercy, which is something more. And that's why it says, "Va'ata b'rachamecha rabim," you with your great mercy. That's what it was. It was saving from your great mercy. And Shemisham Nimshach Liot Ravtai Drivam, and on account of that, you fought their battle. Now comes the question. V'lama tzarich lachzo v'lichpol al dvar tzaratam? Why does it have to repeat it and say again about the trouble that the Jewish people was in, the tzara, the unhappiness of the situation? Ba'omro, by saying, amadata lahem be'et tzaratam, you stood up for them at the time of their troubles. Now, on the right-hand side, at the bottom, you see a little explanation given by the modern editor, who says like this, behem shechamama, in the continuation of the discourse, Yevaya, he'll explain, sheberachamecha rabim amadata lahem be'et tzaratam, that these words, you God stood up for them at the time of their trouble, ba'la hadgish, it comes to emphasize, shedavka avodatam be'etzaratam, that it's specifically the service of the Jewish people during this time of trouble. What kind of service? Mesirut nefesh. Dedication to God in an absolute way of self-sacrifice. that form of service, Hevia Milamaila, brought from above, et HaYeshua, the salvation to the Jewish people, Mimadregat Rachamim Rabim, from the level of the great mercy, Hanitchet Gam Amida. And that great mercy is also called Amida, standing, so to speak, Gaviyachol, God standing as opposed to sitting. Amadat Alahem, like in the words, you stood up for them. So that is the that's what is going to be explained. And so basically what the discourse is about is the theme of Mesirut Nefesh. At a certain level relating to the Hanukkah story, but in fact more generally in terms of people's lives and what that means, in terms of a sense of intensity in life. Now, this is a discussion we often have, the whole idea of a kind of a relaxed and contained approach to Jewish teaching, and this sort of extra intensity which burns, as it were, within these teachings, you know. So that is what the author, the Rebbe, is trying to communicate through the chain of Hasidic discourses, beginning with the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman. And in fact, he's going to focus on a discourse by Rabbi Shneur Zalman from 1801, Shabbat Chanukah 1801. So that's 108 years ago. So let's have a look back in the Pnim, in the regular text.
208 years ago.
I'm sorry, you're quite right. Yes, thank you. Quite right. Vayuvan, and we will understand, behektem hamavur b'mamarosh al admor hazaken, by first considering the discourse of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the Alter Rebbe, mishabbat Chanukah, from the Shabbat in Chanukah, d'shnat tavkuf samach bet, of the year 5562, which comes out to 1801. Dibua matchil, which begins, let's just, dibua matchil is the way you define a tosafot, for example, on the page of Talmud. Which tosafot? Dibua matchil something. That's how, so the same phrase is used for discourses as well, these mamarim. And his discourse begins, kine mitzvah b'torah or, the lamp. A mitzvah is a lamp, and Torah is light. V'derech chayim tochachat Musa, and the way of life is a rebuke of Musa, an ethical rebuke. Sheyesh lahavin inyan ha'ava debechol mo'adecha. And what he explains in this discourse is the idea of love of Hashem bechol mo'adecha, with all your power. Now, this is obviously a quote from the Shema. V'ahavta et Hashem elokecha, you should love the Lord your God, b'chol levavecha, with all your heart, u'v'chol nafshecha, and with all your soul, or all your life, u'v'chol mo'edecha, and with everything you've got. Or, the word b'chol mo'edecha is difficult to translate. What does it mean, b'chol mo'edecha? And there are different explanations by the sages.
With all your being.
Really. With all your being. You see, the word ma'od in itself just means very much. So it looks like a strange formulation. Mm. You should love God with all your very much. It's ma'od is not normally a noun. You would expect a noun of some kind, and it's being treated like a noun, like ma'odecha, your ma'od. Mm. So what does it mean, ma'od? One explanation by the sages is b'chol mamoncha, with all your money. So taking ma'od as being, as it were, the possessions of a person. So giving tzedakah. But another way is b'chol midah u'midah shuhu moded alecha, with every measure that God measures out to you, you should still serve God. Or the idea of going beyond, somehow ma'od, very much, meaning going beyond. So there's an ahava which is contained, and there's an ahava which goes, a love which is contained, and a love which goes beyond. Shapeirush shel ma'od, because the meaning of the word ma'od, in the sense that it's being taken here, based on earlier Hasidic teachings, hu bligvul, it means unlimited. So one should love God with all your heart, all your soul, and without limit. Now what does that mean? De lechora in a muvan, at first we don't understand this. Eich yitachen inyan bligvul b'nefesh ha'adam. How can there be something unlimited in the heart of a person, in the soul of a person? Shaharei afilu ha'melachim shebo'olamot ha'elyonim. Because the angels in upper worlds, heim ba'alei gvul v'tachdit, they themselves are limited in some sense. Yeah, there's a verse in Iyov, in the book of Job, uv'malachav yasim tahala. God sends a shock through the angels. The angels are, they're frightened of God. They're also limited. U'makol shekein sha'adam lamata. And how much more human being below who mugbal, a person is limited. Ve'eich yitachem shetia etzlo. How is it possible that for this human being there should be ahava bilti mugbalet, an unlimited love? How is that possible? Then there's another point that he asks, and which v'gam tzarich la'avin v'diyuk ha'lashon. Let's also try to understand the meaning of the words b'chol me'odecha.
How is this b'chol me'odecha linked with the Chanukah bit of the tefillah?
With the Alanisim.
Yes.
That's what he said. That's why we read the commentary in the side, because he says, he's asking on this phrase, amadata, the phrase, amadata lahem be'etzaratam. Why does it say that? Why does it mention again be'etzaratam? At the time you, God, stood up for them at the time of their trouble. It's already described the trouble in considerable detail, in relative detail. Why does it have to mention the trouble again?
Oh.
And the concepts.
Mesirut nefesh bechol meodecha.
Yeah.
That's the link.
Yeah, that's right. The link is
Mesirut nefesh is bechol meodecha.
Yeah, absolutely. Mesirut nefesh is bechol meodecha, and be'etzaratam means the time of their trouble when they had mesirut nefesh for God and for Judaism, standing up for Judaism against the pressure of Hellenization. That's the if you like, the contemporary dimension, which was even more forceful in the time of Rabbi Shneur Zalman. Well, it's forceful all the time, but it's in different modes. You see, for much of the history of the Hasidic movement, there was actually considerable pressures against the Jew as a Jew. In the time of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, there were terrible decrees against the Jewish people. There was what's called the statute concerning the Jews. Which was being talked about at this time, 1801, the statute hadn't been passed yet, but it was being talked about, and later on it was passed, and it caused terrible suffering to the Jewish people.
Was this in
Russia? Yeah, in Russia, Tsarist Russia. And but in later generations, there was the time of the whole communist era when it was literally forbidden to keep Judaism in a proper way, and people would be arrested if they tried to teach their children about Shabbos or something like that. Old people could learn Torah. But if they tried to teach it to children, then that was an anti-communist act. So
with anything Zionist.
Yeah. And so the previous Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, was put in prison and originally condemned to death because he was trying to keep Judaism alive in Russia, in Bolshevik Russia. So now we face different kinds of pressure. Yes, the people aren't, in most places, they're not going to shoot us because we want to keep Shabbos, but there are social pressures. It's the pressure of the raised eyebrow. can be more difficult to count. Yes. What? You eat kosher?
Yeah. It's very true, actually.
Well,
it was much easier to keep kosher when you didn't go to restaurants twice a week.
Well, I know a man who he and his wife, they went with a friend and his wife, two couples, they went to Ascot, right? So they were both at Ascot, and the races, you know, the Queen was there, or one of, you know, someone like that. It was like a very high society occasion, very expensive stand that they had.
Box,
thank you. Thank you for the right terminology. And someone came round with food. And there was, coiled up, whatever, ham. And there was also smoked salmon. So one couple took ham, and the other couple took smoked salmon. So the couple who took ham...
Both Jewish.
So the one who took ham said, why don't you take the ham? It's so tasty. Oh, well, actually, we keep kosher. What? You keep kosher? And there was a whole discussion between them. And the couple who took ham eventually began keeping kosher themselves, you know, after quite a long cycle of events. But it was such a shocking thing, such an amazing thing. Eventually they began keeping kosher. However, their biggest mesirut nefesh was not being able to go to a nice, expensive West End restaurant where some famous person, the prime minister, might walk in, or a famous actor. They just had to go to these Golders Green restaurants where no prime ministers come.
Except for Boris, what's his name, Johnson, during his election campaign, and he went up and down in Hendon at Bagels.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Poor guy, he's overweight enough, trying to lose weight. All these guys were stuffing bagels down his.
Well, they're different. In fact, it speaks here, the kind of Mesirut Nefesh it defines is tshuva. Tshuva, the process of a person changing their lifestyle in some way and becoming more observant and beginning to keep Shabbat or Kashrut or something like that, or some more, inward dimension that other people don't see. But that quality of tshuva, that is the Mesirut Nefesh, that's the self-sacrifice which reaches to a higher dimension of godliness, and from which comes the Rachamim Rabim, the great mercy. So we're talking about breaking through to a higher level of godliness through our own Mesirut Nefesh, our own self-sacrifice, in some form. Now, over here, he's asking, what does it mean serving God or loving God in an infinite way, in a boundless way? Ahava bilti mugbelet. How is that possible? An unlimited love. V'gam tzarich la'avin. Now, he's asking a second question, but this second question actually answers the first. And it's a very interesting point. V'gam tzarich la'avin diyuk ha'lashon b'chol mo'odecha. One also has to understand the precise wording, mo'odecha, your ma'od. V'lo ma'od stam. It doesn't just say ma'od, unlimited. It's saying your unlimited. Shahari ma'od stam, because ordinary, unlimited, without being qualified as yours, perusho, that would mean bli gvul v'shiur, without any kind of limit. V'ilu ma'odecha. So this is describing a person who, in many ways, is a fine image of positive spiritual service of God. The only thing is, he is not facing any intense personal inner transformation. And in that sense, there's something static about him. In some sense, he's coasting along. V'tam hadova, and the reason is, which is line 19 coming to 20, dechevan sha'ava mimaletit klei aleif, since the love fills the vessel of the heart, umitlabeshet betocham, and is enclosed in them, harehi mukefet umuchusa b'chlei aleif, the love is surrounded and hidden by the vessel of the heart, shemakifim uta mechasim aleh, which cover and surround and cover the of the love. Uvemela, and therefore eina av yichola lashanot et klei halev. The love is not able to change the nature of his heart. In other words, meaning the emotions which are within him. Let's just try and move a little bit quicker. Now, if we turn over the page, or turn to the back of that page, V'yuvan alpi, that's page
Zayin,
right, and it's line 4. Now, this is an interesting thing about teaching. He uses an image of teaching. V'yuvan alpi mashal mehashpa'at ha-seichel. This can be understood from an image of a person teaching ideas, shemashmiya harav letalmido, the teacher is teaching his student. Dine sechel harav, now the mind of the teacher, gama sechel shemashmiya letalmid, also the intellect or the ideas, the concepts that he's giving to his student. It's separate, it's beyond the what the student himself, the level of the student. And therefore, when the teacher contracts the idea he's trying to teach, which he's teaching to his student, and he contracts the idea lefi erech klisich lo shel haTalmid. He makes it at the level of the mind of the student. Azay ba hashpa'at haseichel bepnimiyuto shel haTalmid. Then the idea can be completely absorbed by the student inwardly. Shetofetz u'makif ota bechlei sichlo, and he grasps the idea perfectly with his mind. In other words, the great idea has been somehow or other condensed into such a form that the student can really understand it. Avalad yedei zeh, but through this, mishtane dakut ha-seichel harav, the idea that the teacher is trying to communicate has actually been transformed. Lufi erech gasut hasagat haTalmid. It's been transformed into a form that the student is able to understand. But there's a sense in which the idea has been vulgarized. In order for the student to be able to understand it, it's had to be watered down or made into something more gross. And that's what the student can understand. And the student understands it, but there's a sense in which something's been lost from the point of view of the teacher. Whereas if
it's
you're
from the point of view of the student, not from the point of view of the teaching.
Well, the student doesn't realize.
Something has been lost from the point of view of the student.
Yeah, but
according to what you
think. Yeah, but the student doesn't realize. The student has been given an idea and he understands the idea and is very happy.
And the teacher does realize this as well.
Well, I think the suggestion is that the teacher needs to be aware that although he's managed to explain the idea in a simple...
That is not going to bring about a spark in the student.
That's right. That's exactly it.
So that's what has been lost.
Yes.
So it's not Bechol Meodecha. Bechol Meodecha is giving to the student something me'ever le'yichodos.
Absolutely. Yeah. You understand perfectly. Yeah. You see? The idea is to teach the student in such a way that it's more than he can grasp, and because of that he has to make some kind of leap.
To stretch him all the time.
And he's stretched. And because of that, he's actually changed. He comes out of that course a new person. Mm. His whole way of thinking is in a different way. Mm. Whereas if everything is just chopped up into tiny little pieces and spoon-fed to him, he's absorbed it and he can answer the questions in the exam, but he hasn't actually changed in any kind of...
Which is the way most people learn, by the way, which is, you know, in general terms, not in Judaism just.
Well, yeah, I mean...
In the English educational system,
yes. Exactly.
Yes.
That's
what I was thinking. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, would you say it's different in Israel?
Yes.
There's more stretching of the student.
Yes.
Interesting.
Physical stretching. They have to stay up long and work harder.
Really?
Yes. At least in my, for my, from
the
what I know.
The system is very particular.
Mm. It's very
particular.
What do you mean particular?
Doesn't stretch. It's a big hoo ha if they have to sit exams.
No, I mean physical, that it's a physical task, yes, that you have to do a lot of work. Someone will say that the bridge system stretches you more in the sense of that you have to, it's not just doing the hard work, it's leap forward.
It's more individualistic.
Yes?
It does not depend on which subject it is.
Hmm?
Sorry?
In Israel, doesn't it depend on which subject it is? Then you could overall.
Well, the system is different.
I mean, the system is different.
But for maths and science, they stretch them. But for history and things like that, not necessarily.
No,
yes, that's true.
Well,
I said about what. Sorry.
Overall, here they overall they don't stretch them, but there it's specific to the subject.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I said my feeling from sciences. Yes. Yeah. They do stretch, but they stretch them in a way that. There is a lot of work. We had in the first year at university, we had something like 45 or 46 or something in the 40s hours a week, and that's only in 6 days, 5.5 days. So it was
what lecture time?
Yes, amazing. Of actual contact, which is. Sorry? For what? Oh, so many people...
They pay so many hours.
Oh, they had a lot... There was a lot of student assistant, teaching assistants.
Uh-huh.
Yes, so it's two groups of people.
Still.
Lecturers and teaching assistants.
In England,
in social work, we had 25 hours a week. Not 40 hours a week. Mm. In Israel.
Well, that's still a lot here.
No, that was in Israel. 25 hours a week.
Oh.
Yeah, but compared to here, here you probably have 5.
Or 6.
Okay, so then we have paragraph 4. So in the section we just read, it's talking about intellectual advancement, that if one is stretched, there is some kind of real change within the person. And similarly with the love which is more powerful, b'chol modecha, which goes beyond the limits of one's own personal vessel for the love. That's the love that is going to change the mahut of the person. The person's going to become a different kind of person. And that idea that a person should be a different kind of person is a very interesting concept. In fact, at this dinner on Sunday, one of the stories he told, I was very struck with. It's a story which is supposed to have been told by a Belzer Rebbe, by Rabbi Yisachar Doiv of Belz, who was the Belzer Rebbe who met Kafka. I think, or he certainly knew Jerry Langer, who was a friend of Kafka, who became a Baal Tshuva in the beginning of the 20th century, around 1914. So Rabbi Yisachar Doiv came to a community where they had a terrible problem. Somehow, I can't remember, and I don't know if he said what the problem was, but there was some problem in the community, and there's the community council sitting around discussing. And the Belzer Rebbe comes into the discussion, and he's listening to what they're saying. So he says, well, let me tell you a story. There was a medical student who was being examined by his professor. He had studied for many years medicine, and now he's coming to an examination by his professor. So the professor asks him various questions of the kind you would expect, you know, what do you use this medication for, and what do you do in such a case. Then the professor suddenly says, now imagine if you're walking along in the street and suddenly there is an accident and there's a person lying on the ground pouring with blood. What do you do? So, I take out my medical bag and I put on this swab and that swab. And the professor said, yeah, but what happens if you haven't got your medical bag with you? So the student said, well, I'll ask if anyone has bandages or something that could be used as a swab. And what if no one has anything like that? What do you do? And the student's thinking, you know, what do I do? And the professor said, okay, that's the end of the exam. I'm sorry. Leave the room. And the student said, what do you mean, leave the room? The professor says, if you are a doctor, you've got a shirt. You take off your shirt. You use your shirt to tie up the wound. And what the Rebbe was saying to the community council is, you know, if you care about this situation, you know, you've got to do something yourself. You know, the Rebbe was apparently, he thought that they were just sitting around discussing it without really no one getting into uvei hakora, no one really taking any real responsibility. So it's that sense of taking total responsibility, you know, and that's what this love should have an effect, because otherwise you can go on sailing along and be even a very pious and spiritual individual, but no real inner transformation taking place. So that's like, intellectually, the idea of a person being stretched and suddenly having a real understanding of the subject, or a higher level of understanding of the subject. Maybe next term he'll be stretched again and he'll go to an even higher level. And similarly with love. Now the other thing is, what it says in section Dalet, that the love which is contained, the love remains the same. The love doesn't burn more. Whereas the love which is not contained, we can look. Now we've got these wonderful numbers. Look at page number 28, line 28. Masha'en ken kasher ava hilamayla mitlabshut bechlei alev, which is not the case when the love is higher than being enclosed in the heart, b'chol modercha, with all your power, v'nisheret b'vchinat, that means b'chol modercha, without limit, v'nisheret b'vchinat makif, it's in a surrounding way. It can't go all into the heart. It's too much. Azaya makif poel gamal apnimi. Then the surrounding love, which is too much to fit into the heart, affects also that which is within the heart. Lahaloto bi'ilui acha ilui. To elevate it higher and higher. Va'ad shemishana l'shana. So that from year to year, miyom liyom, and from day to day, umirega larega, and from moment to moment, holech minitosef b'malat ha'ava bi'ilui acha ilui. The level of love goes on higher and higher in a completely infinite, in a completely boundless way. Okay, we're now on page Chet. And now it's speaking about, in relation to God, what is the difference between these two kinds of love. And basically what it's saying is that the higher level of love reaches to a much higher level in terms of the divine. And if we look at Vav, paragraph Vav, V'hine chasher ava shlemayle mamdide v'agbala dechle alei b'chol modecha. When this love, which is beyond limitation of the vessel of the heart, Magad reaches ba'amitat ha'beligvul k'moshu lemayla, reaches the boundless quality above, the divine boundlessness, u'po'elet shegam lemata yumshach v'yitgaleh amitat ha'beligvul. It has the effect that also below should be drawn down this true boundlessness of the divine, the way it is above. And so this, now, here we have a concept that was, you see, there's a phrase, Hashem Lamabul Yashav. God was sitting at the time of the flood. Hashem Lamabul Yashav, it's in Tehillim. Now, sitting is described in the next paragraph, because we now, you see, amadata lahem be'et saratam, you stood up for them at the time of their problems, and the problems mean that they had mesirat nefesh, self-sacrifice, they went beyond the limits, and as a result, so to speak, God stood up. Now, what does it mean, stood up? During the flood, God sat. Now, what does that mean? Ubeo inyan, the bottom of page chet. Explaining this, dine achiluk vein yeshiva v'amida lemayla, the difference between sitting and standing above. Of course, it's an anthropomorphic concept, but it's a way of describing different aspects of the divine relationship with the world. Shelo shayer sham tarei aguf, v'lo naroch elav kedushato, you can't use these human terms in relation to God. But nonetheless, let's try and understand this through looking Yuvan me'achiluk shebeinem ba'adam ha'tachton. Let's see what happens with a human being below. Shebi yeshiva, when a person's sitting, nishba la'rosh me'agba'ato, the head is lower than normal than it is when he's standing up. Va'raglayim mugba'im in ha'aretz, and his feet can be lifted off from the earth. But when he stands, it's the other way around. His head is high, and the feet have to be standing on the ground. What does this mean in relation to the divine? The image of this above. Shinyana yeshiva, sitting, more al hashpalat v'yiridat b'chinat ha'mochin l'tzorech hashpa'a b'olamot. It's as if the exalted dimensions of spirituality and holiness are in some way lower for the sake of giving some kind of flow into the world. Dehine amru chazal, the sages say, shteimes reshal in the Talmud. This is a passage in the Talmud, like it says in footnote 12, Avodah Zarah 3b. The sages said, 12 shaot have ayam. There are 12 hours in a day. What happens? Shalosh harishonot, the three first hours. What does God do? It says in the commentary on the side, quoting from the Talmud, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yoshev Osek BaTorah. God sits, so to speak, and is occupied in Torah. Shniyot, the second three set of 3 hours. Yoshev V'dan Et Kol HaOlam Kulo. He sits and judges the whole world. Shlishiyot, the third set of 3 hours. Yoshev V'zan Et Kol HaOlam Kulo. He sits and feeds the whole world. And so on. Now, what does that mean? He's feeding the whole world. He's bringing life force into the world. That's what it means. He's feeding the whole world. And that is a kind of a descent. That's as if, kviyachol, so to speak, that God, in some sense, is making himself smaller. Va'al ze amru chazal, if you move to line 14. About this, the sages said, b'makom gudulato sham ata motze anbatanuto. At the place of his greatness, there you find his humility. And that means the whole concept that in order for God to give this life force to the world, there is some sense in which it is somehow God contracting himself down. Let's go over the page. Goes into more detail about this. So because of that, because it's a kind of divine contraction in order to pour this life force and energy down below into the world, that's why it's called sitting, in the sense of the head being lower. That there's some sense, like the great scholar who has to contract what he's doing in order to teach the pupil, he has to condense it into a form that the pupil is able to absorb, but doesn't stretch the pupil. V'od zod be'inyan ha'yeshiva, but another point about the sitting. Sharaglayim mugba'im min ha'aretz. The feet
are... Where is this?
This is page Yud, and it's line 6. Sharaglayim mugba'im min ha'aretz. The feet are lifted up from the ground. Ki be'et ha'yirida li'b'chinat ha'mochin li'b'chinat ha'midot li'tzorach ha'din u'mishpat. He's going through a whole scale of steps that he explained the paragraph before, which we've missed out. Azay mistaleket lifishah ashpa'a mibchinat nehi. In other words, there's a kind of a process of bringing this hashpa'a down, but it doesn't necessarily reach the lowest levels. It's just a process of being muktan. The flow is being contracted, and because it's being contracted, it actually doesn't go anywhere. It's just coming down, but it's not actually really getting into the world, because the feet are, so to speak, lifted up. So the if we put that back into the image of the teacher, it's as if he's working on creating this image which the student will be able to understand. But it doesn't actually go, he doesn't even bring it to the student, because he's working on how to make it into a simpler image, and he's going to use a metaphor from football and this and that. And he ends up, he's worrying about this, he doesn't even bring it into the mind of the student. V'zehu, now, the word v'zehu, line 13. Mm-hmm. That's what it means. God was sitting by the flood. That there is a hashpalat v'yiridat p'chinat ha'mochen. It's that the spiritual, so to speak, mind of God is being contracted downwards in order to judge the generation of the flood. And because of this, there is a lifting up of the feet. That means that there is no proper flow below. In fact, it's the flood. It's not protecting or looking after the people, it's the opposite. It's the chaos of the flood. It's very striking terminology here, actually. So there is that sense of godliness not, in a sense, not relating to the world. And then he moves in and he says, well, that was before the giving of the Torah. Now we're after the giving of the Torah. But the point is, that is the sitting of God. And what we're talking about is the idea of the standing of God. Because the standing of God is the very opposite. The Amadat Alehem, you stood up for them at the time of their pain, when they were really dedicated to God in that tremendous way in the story of Hanukkah, reaching the very highest level of godliness, triggering off that exalted level of godliness is now going to shine down, and the feet are on the ground. So it actually reaches right down into the world, and therefore it affects the people. And he then quotes on page Yud Aleph, he quotes from the discourse of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, line 15, Mashal nifla, a remarkable mashal, Mahanitchak bepetach heichal ha-melech, there's a man trying to get into the palace of the king. Now, she'im hayu manichim oto leilech, if they would let him in, they lo haya dochek kol kach lahavki atzmo. He wouldn't try so hard to get in. They open the door and he would walk into the king, finished. Aval kushein manichin oto, but when they don't let him in, the guards don't let him into the palace. Mipnei hamarirut, because he is so upset that he's not being let in. Makehu bapetach, he bangs on the door. Ad shiya, which perhaps is a risk to himself, what he's doing, banging on the door of the palace. Ad shiyamod hamelech liftoach lo, till the king himself gets up to open the door for him. Shelo yuchal lisbol b'haka'a b'petach, because the king cannot bear the fact that he's banging on the door and he must respond. V'day le'mevin, and it's enough for one to understand.
That there is another story about this. I think the Rambam tells it, about a man that goes to the gate of the city and there is a guard at the entrance, and he says, okay, I want to go in. The guard says, no, you can't. And he says, okay, I'll come tomorrow. And he comes tomorrow and says, I want to go in, and does it, this the whole of his life. And at the end, when he's dying, he sees that the guard is about to leave, and he says, hold on, why are you leaving? Because someone else might try to come in. And the guard says, well, I was here to stop you. Now you're not going to come in or try to come in anymore. I can leave. And the idea in the story, which I said is from the Rambam, or I think from the Rambam, is that you do have to push yourself in. That he was, the guard was too strong for him to push him through, but that's what he should have done if he wanted to go in, to go through the guard somehow. Which is similar to
it's,
this, but...
It's a beautiful idea that the story is from the Rambam. Which book of the Rambam?
I can't say.
Because the story that I know is by Franz Kafka. the same story, except that at the end the guard says, this door was only for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
What is it, the castle or something?
It's well, not, no, it's a fragment. It's in one of his books.
I am mixing two things. The Rambam talks about getting into the...
Oh, the Rambam has a famous mashal in Mora Nebuchim, in Guide for the Perplexed, about people who don't try to get into the castle.
They just walk
around outside.
And then people that get into the castle but don't get into the building, and then people get into the building. That's the famous
image that you have to do more than just study Talmud. In all the stories, to do more
than what you think you're doing.
Yes, that's true.
Very obvious.
So there is this concept of so that's what it means, basically. That's this concept of Amadata Lehem Be'etzaratam. You stood up, that God stood up because of the people going beyond the limitations, bligvul, beyond limits. And that's the way, that's the path to serve God in such a way that we reach the very essence and draw down the Rachamim Rabim with the great mercy which works miracles and transforms everything and brings about the beauty of Hanukkah. Okay.
Also, the Mevin from Levan.
Whereas your limit, you're unlimited.